Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 20th day of August, 2010. Well, if ProFarmer has the corn production number right and ADM has the increase in demand correct, it could push corn carryout below a billion bushels. Do our analysts think this is possible? We'll ask about the consequences today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Pro Farmer's Chip Flory. Our panelists in studio today include Pete Manhart, Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois; Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana; and Aaron Curtis of Midco from Bloomington, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Now let's open today's discussion with this question. Aaron Curtis, Pro Farmer, thinks this year's Illinois corn crop, according to their massage after they got done with the tour, should be a bushel better than last. Do you agree?
Well, I think there's still some question mark there, but I would agree closer to that number than I do the USDA report. I know we talked a little bit about that last week, about some doubt in that 180 USDA Illinois number. I don't think we're too close to that, but I agree we're probably closer to something in that 170s area. The question is going to be that north of 80 mark, which looks very good at this point. Can that make up for some of the variability that we're seeing down here in central Illinois? You know, some of these local tours are showing corn production down 5 to 10% from last year. So we'll see if some of those good areas can make up for some of these more variable areas.
USDA, of course, at 180. Pete Manhart, the Pro Farmer tour number was, well, the Pro Farmer number, not the tour number, but the Pro Farmer number is 175.
I would agree with Aaron about it being closer to right than the 180. I was at a meeting this week down just above Interstate 70, and they were talking about better crop than last year. And I've talked to deep southern Illinois having a good crop. So all in all, I think maybe it's fairly close to right. It's just that here in central Illinois, we're in an area where we're 10% less than last year. So that maybe sways our mind a little.
Mike Zuzolo?
I think that the comprehensiveness of Pro Farmer's tour is so good, it's hard to disagree with it because they do such a comprehensive tour. Having said that, the survey that I put out to clients overwhelmingly in the central Corn Belt, 76% of them had said as of August 1, in the central Corn Belt especially, they did not see any improvement or crop had gone down, and that was as of August 1. Many of those same clients have resubmitted verbally or by email another survey since the last 2 weeks and have said they've lost even more bushels. So I think it goes back to where did we start out from in Illinois, Todd. I think what Pete was talking about, 10 to 15% better, was probably where we started out at, and now we're back down to maybe 0 to 5% less. So I think it's high based upon the survey that I've seen lately from our clients.
Let's broaden those numbers out. We'll start by going to the CME Group at the Board of Trade. September contract in the corn had a high this week at $4.23. The low on the weekly trade at $4.05¾. Settlement price was 9.5 cents higher than last Friday at $4.21¼ in the September contract. And remember, these are Friday to Friday differences for the weekly trade. December corn at $4.42¼ settlement price, it was off a penny or down 1 cent from the previous Friday's close. Pro Farmer's numbers finished like this for corn. They pegged the corn crop now at 13.29 billion bushels with a national average yield of 164.1 bushels to the acre. That 13.29 compares to the 13.365 that came out from USDA. That's a 75 million bushel loss in the production. And then, of course, the carryout from USDA is at 1.312. So I want to do some math with you, so let's make it easy. So we're at 70 million bushels, 75 million bushels less from ProFarmer. ADM this week has been talking about a 250 million bushel increase in demand. That's 325. Subtract that from the 1312, and you're below a billion bushels in corn carryout next year. Can it get that tight?
I think we can. I think we've seen, you know, especially as we look at the export sales number we saw Thursday morning, we saw that increase, and we also see these continue to be these daily announcements, almost seems daily anyway, from some of these export numbers. So I think we see that export number creep up into that 2.35, 2.4 billion bushel market, and I think the market's starting to trade a little something closer to that 1 billion bushel carryout at this point.
I would agree with Aaron. The usage is just tremendous. China bought corn from us. We don't know if they'll buy more, but it's thought they will, even though they have a big yields there too. But usage worldwide, demand, and they're having to come to here to get it because Eastern Europe and the Ukraine and Russia's crop isn't as good from that drought. So I think that the usage is the big thing we have to worry about now of how much are we really going to use.
And the big question now, Todd, is that, yeah, I think we can go and are going to go below a billion bushels. But the question is now, as we close near our weekly highs and our major highs from about the last 2 weeks up around that 439 level in Dease corn, closed on weekly lows in the Nov beans. So clearly, in my mind, the trade already had been factoring in probably a 162 yield and a billion bushels, if not a slightly less than a billion bushels number, by being stuck up there around that 440 level. When I saw the 164.1 number by Pro Farmer, my first reaction was, well, that's not very friendly. That's actually pretty bearish because the trade's already been buying corn and selling beans in anticipation of this number. So if the beans continue lower and the weather comes through, the rains come through this weekend, I wouldn't be surprised to see the corn sell off on Sunday night.
You think the corn had the extra 250 in there too?
I think they're above USDA. I do in demand. I think their export number is already above 2050 right now.
Okay, so of my three here, you're the least friendly of the marketplace for corn.
As far as the Pro Farmer reaction by the trade, yes.
Right, and what do you? And then on the corn complex itself?
If you take Friday's low out or Thursday night's low out of 424, you take out a trend line, you kind of do in the corn, I think what you did in the beans last week, you kind of throw everybody and the liquidation comes in, then you go back to the next trend line around 406, 410. That's kind of how I see it technically.
And the other thing, today that close was 7 cents higher right in the last 3 minutes. If you looked at it 5 minutes before that, we were back close to unchanged. So we gained 7 of that in the last couple of minutes today.
Why? Do we know?
I think it was people trying to get in that were trying to buy it lower and wanting to be long, but they just wanted to be long because of they thinking the usage higher.
Thoughts here? Everybody wants to be relatively friendly in the corn market. Is that right? I mean,
long term, I think, yeah. Medium term, long term. Demand wise, sure.
And what are we talking about on the upper side of the range then?
Well, if we can get through this 438 and three quarters area we set a couple weeks ago, I mean, we probably grind a little bit higher into that 450, but I think you're going to see some resistance, especially as parts of the country start to creep towards a $4 cash area. I think you're going to start to see some resistance. You're going to see some more farmers selling. But I think the fund's going to play a key role in here. You know, Commitment to Traders report this afternoon confirmed that the funds are tremendously long here. You know, we're already at levels we saw back in 2008. So, like I said earlier in the week, I think, you know, do they stay or do they go at this point? And if we don't continue to have that support from the funds, do we start to grind lower here as we approach this big crop out in the field?
Any insight on the funds?
I think they're going to continue to buy, but I think here as we approach harvest, you could see some backing up due to that. But I think long term, because of usage, we're looking at the 450 area, and then we're looking at 490 to be taken out.
All right.
The managed number, the commitment of traders managed number from last Friday, the managed funds, the CTAs, the commodity trading funds that are mostly technically oriented, they were about 435% more net long than they were before the June 30th acreage report. So they're in this. And they're, like I said, very technically oriented. And I think that's what happened to the beans this past week is the technicals broke on a lack of follow through to the upside. I think that's something to watch in the corn.
Well, I'm just thinking about the conversation we've had and how producers might perceive this. $4 cash corn probably sound.
Sell.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, does the trade buy into pro farmers' numbers, or do they go with, you know, Dr. Good's numbers or something lower, closer to 158? That's the big issue. But I think in wrapped in that is how the funds have been trading the beans this past week, and how can the corn hold up seasonally if there's not something fundamentally to hold it up when you're going into harvest?
Let me back it up just a little bit. So pretty much, unless we have something bigger than a 165, and even in that case, I think everybody's going to want to stay friendly the corn market. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah, long term.
Yeah. So producers are going to be very happy about that, and I don't know whether they're going to want to start to close the bin door, even above $4 on cash. I think. But you're saying sell it.
I think anytime you get above four cash, you need to participate in some more sales. Unless you've already got everything sold, you need to sell.
Yeah, I think you can be cautiously optimistic here, but unfortunately that doesn't pay the bills. So you got to be a little prudent here and continue to reward the market as we move higher.
I'm saying you close below 424 in D's corn, be technically ready for a test of the $4 area and make a determination of whether you want to sell some paper there. I would not sell cash bushels unless it's off the combine, but like I told Dave Friday morning, I would sell off the combine if we broke through 424, Todd.
All right, let's go to the market where this started a couple of weeks ago. That's in the wheat. September contract, a high at $7.09 on the week, a low at $6.45. Settlement price was at $6.79, down 23 and a quarter, or rather 23 and a half from last week. July wheat for next year at $7.06 and a quarter, down 5 3/4. I think most everybody probably would have told their clients at this point, if you're going to add the acres, make the sales. Are you still at that point?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you're going to add some wheat acres, you got to be rewarding this market here a little bit and locking in some of these values that we're seeing.
I think if you're going to add up wheat acres, you're going to have trouble finding seed. People have already got the seed gone, but you got to lock in those numbers. We still have, the third largest wheat crop of all time, which just now have to be bought from us and other places, not from Russia.
I probably would not make any recommendations for new crop hedges if we went back down to that 625 level in front end. I think the world wheat price is very well supported there, and the end users will keep buying at that price level, Todd.
So at Complex, I'm going to let you talk more about this because we started with you. September, a high this week at $10.50 and a quarter, a low at $10.05 and three quarters. Settlement price in the September soybeans, $10.09 and a quarter. Down 34 and a quarter cents from last week. The November beans at $10.04 dropped 40 cents. You made a lot of note of this.
I did because, you know, the last 6 months, if you look at a bean chart and you cut flat lines across it, the beans have been moving at about 45 to 50 cent increments. And so you go up 45 to 50. And with the pro farmer numbers out, you factored in bearishness, I think, versus last week's USDA report compared to this past Friday's close. You're back below the USDA report day low. So you should have enough bearishness factored in. You've got the weather that is coming through on Saturday and Sunday as far as rains in the driest areas of the central corn bean belt. If you get that weather and you have factored in the bearish crop numbers from Pro Farmer, the beans need to make a determination right here, right now, whether they've got another 45 to 50 cent leg lower coming in next week's trade.
The pro farmer numbers look like this for the soybeans. They say the crop will be a 3.5 billion bushel crop on a great big yield, 44.9 bushels to the acre. Can it be that big?
Well, I think it can. I mean, I guess the question, and we'll talk to Chip here in a little bit, but, you know, this SDS factor, I guess, you know, we talk about 20 to 60% yield cuts. We'll see how that influences, and it'll be interesting to see Chip's opinion on that. But, yeah, at this point, if we can catch a couple rains here, I still think we have some potential to see some pretty good-sized bean crops in parts of the Midwest.
On the bean market, we're this week in the November contract at $10.04. It was down 40, but we're still well above what the crop insurance numbers look like. Are you selling the soybean?
above $10 cash, we're definitely selling them, thinking that that's a sell anytime it gets there. I think the other thing you have to look at on beans, again, is usage. Look at the last 2 weeks' sales, 80-some million for this Thursday. The week before, it was 95 million. So I think usage there is also huge. But we do have enough of it around the world so that 10 is really, if you look at fundamentals, way too high.
And China has been in the marketplace. They've come back into the marketplace. Dr. Good told us in January that they might come back. He thought that would be the case. Will they stay for very long this time around?
I think they have the potential to because their livestock production. I think it goes back to that you'll see ripple effects in countries like China because of Australia's wheat crop, because of Russia's wheat crop. I think China sees a shrinking supply just like the rest of us do.
Yeah, China needs to buy a million metric tons of beans a week to meet their needs, so I don't think they're going anywhere.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. In just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Chip Flory, a pro farmer. Our panelists in studio include Mike Zuzulo, Aaron Curtis, and Pete Manhart.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After weeks of high dew points and warmer than normal temperatures, Illinois residents enjoyed a string of days with low dew points and seasonal temperatures. Temperatures this week were generally close to normal, ranging from about a degree below normal in far western Illinois to a degree above in eastern Illinois. The lower dew points this week and clear to partly cloudy skies overnight allowed low temperatures to drop into the mid and upper 50s north and into the low 60s central and south. It was also another dry week across most of the state. Precipitation was widely scattered across the state early in the week, although rain was a little more widespread in coverage in western Illinois. However, amounts were light, generally less than 1/4 inch. At this point in August, southeastern Illinois into the southern half of Indiana is the driest region in the Midwest for the month. Unfortunately, it looks like dry weather will continue to be the rule next week. There is a chance for some showers on Tuesday as a cold front moves through Illinois, but coverage will be limited and amounts are likely to be light. Once that front moves through Illinois, cooler, drier air will spread into the Midwest and will bring a cooler and less humid weather for the last half of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You can hear Commodity Week anytime you'd like off our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 20th day of August, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason from the University of Illinois. Our panelists in studio include Aaron Curtis of Midco, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. On the phone line with us is Chip Flory, fresh off the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. Thank you for joining us today. Hope you're feeling, well, a little refreshed. I bet you were working numbers all day today.
Oh, yeah. We worked numbers until almost 5 o'clock in the morning. Last night or this morning, went into lockup and stayed at her until we came up with a number that I really feel comfortable with now that I've had a chance to sit back and take a look at the numbers again. But I tell you what, I'm ready to go home, kiss the wife, maybe have a cold one, and find my easy chair for a while.
Well, before you do that, let's talk about some of those numbers because they're fresh in your mind. You see a big crop for both corn and soybeans.
You bet we do. I'm just going to sum up the crop tour here just real quick for you. And it's really pretty easy to do. We saw a corn crop that was better than a year ago in Ohio and Indiana. We saw a corn crop in South Dakota and Iowa that won't quite measure up with what we saw a year ago. And then we saw a corn crop in Illinois, South Dakota, and Minnesota that was basically unchanged from last year. The one variable that we've got to take into consideration is the maturity of this year's crop. It was probably the most mature corn crop that we've seen from Ohio to Nebraska and central Minnesota down to southern Illinois in 17 years of doing the tour. The maturity of the crop means that you've got to trust the numbers that the crop tour generates more than you would in a year like 2009 or even 2008 when we looked at a crop that just simply was weeks away from maturity. Now, I'm going to share one crop tour number with you guys that I'm sure that you haven't heard yet, but we take all the samples, and this year is 1,014 corn samples, put it into one spreadsheet and run an average of the yields. And this year it kicked out a 167.3. Now, when you go through Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, Nebraska, you better have an average yield that is above USDA's national yield at the end of the year, okay? We're taking a loin cut out of the Midwest. It had better be a big yield. Over the since 2000, on average, that number has been 5.7 bushels above the USDA final. But in a year when maturity is high, that miss is smaller. So it starts to creep up closer and closer. If you take all 5.7 bushels off that 167.3, you know, all of a sudden you're down into the 161 something. We don't feel like we had to go all, we sure didn't feel like we had to go all the way. And in years like 2004, for example, when we looked at a mature corn crop out there, this final number was off by about 3.5 bushels. So essentially, what we did was cut the historical error on that number in half, and you end up right around 164.1 bushels per acre. Then you start to work backwards and fill in the states to see how the states are going to work toward that 164.1. And I'm not ashamed to tell you guys that we start with the national number and then back off to the states, because that's exactly how USDA does it. And it makes sense. You work with your biggest and most reliable set of data and then work down into the smaller sets of data and those that there's more variability from year to year. So we feel real good about that 164.1 bushels per acre. Do we have all the states exactly right? Gosh, probably not. But I think that we're going to end up being real close this year, because we measured such a mature corn crop at that 164.1. We do allow for a little bit of variability. We release this estimate in a range, and 164.1 is the midpoint of plus or minus 1%. And essentially what we're doing by putting that range on there is telling you that we don't believe that the national average yield is going to get below 162.5, and we sure don't see it getting above 165.7. Okay? Now, on the bean crop, kind of the same story. The only state that we saw a lower pod count in was Ohio. We saw relatively minor pod count increases in Indiana and Nebraska. We saw moderate pod count increases in Illinois and Iowa. And we saw huge pod count increases in South Dakota and Minnesota. The pod counts don't necessarily translate into a big yield, because you got to have water out there to make a big bean to support that pod. And of course, we're not counting the number of beans per pod either, guys. And there's some variability with that out there. So we're trying to make some observations as we go. But we saw enough of a bean crop out there to support this 44.9. We do a plus or minus 2% on the bean yield estimate. And that's simply because the crop is more vulnerable to some late season stresses. And plus, you give it a shot of water now, and it can plump up and get a little bit bigger than what the crop was that we saw. So at 44.9, that's in the middle of a range from 44.0 up to 45.8. So it was a really good corn crop that we looked at, but it was a great bean crop. The exception there, you know, and this is where the risk is, and I hate the fact that the risk is in the biggest bean-producing state, but if that SDS takes a bite out of that Iowa crop, we put Iowa at 50.5 bushels per acre, and if the SDS really kicks in and gets much worse than what it is, we're not going to make 50.5 bushel.
Chip, this is Aaron. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your comments, obviously, during the week, and I enjoy reading your comments on the tour. I know my customers especially enjoy hearing about other parts of the country we don't get to drive through. I guess a question on your final production numbers we saw this afternoon. I've read that, you know, your tour is just a part of that final number. Can you talk a little bit about that process and also what other factors go into those numbers we saw this afternoon?
You bet. But I will tell you this much, that the tour numbers this year were a bigger part of the pro farmer crop estimate than they typically are. We did not make any adjustments for test weight this year. We did not make any adjustments with the idea that we're going to be harvesting high moisture corn. We didn't even make any adjustments on kernel size. And that's something that we take a pretty close look at most years, and especially this year. The rule of thumb is 90,000 kernels per bushel. You go back to the 95 crop, which is the year that is most comparable to 2010 as far as the nighttime temperatures go and so on. And in 1995, it probably took 105, 106, 110,000 kernels to make a bushel. The experienced scouts and the producers that are out there in the field with us, I asked them at the start of the week to break the ears, take a look at the kernel depth, and if they had any concern at all over the size of the kernel, they had to let me know. And none of them expressed any concern over the size of the kernel. That really surprised me. I expected that we were going to see a kernel size issue this year. I had stories written, guys, talking about the size of the kernels, and now I'm going to throw them away.
Here in Central Illinois, we've had a few fields harvested, and that's one of the things they're talking about is 51, 52-pound test weight.
Really?
On 19% corn right now, yes.
Okay. Interesting. Is that short-season corn?
It's just regular corn that they started with.
Hmm.
Chip, going back to the sudden death, I had a call from a really well-respected Dow Jones Newswire reporter midweek, and one of a very high-ranking Iowa State plant pathologist came out and said, in his mind, in his opinion, we're looking at 150 million bushel loss in just Iowa alone. And that did hit the news wires, but it didn't take any effect, it seemed like to me, because the pod counts that you guys were putting out were really, really up there. And that's not a pro or con, but help me visualize the Iowa crop. If that guy can say 150 million off Iowa, surely there's some pretty bad situations of sudden death already. And did you guys factor that in?
Yeah, yep, we did factor it in. One of the things that I convinced the scouts to try to do, and this is because, you know, when you see that field that is heavily infected with SDS, you just want to stare at it when you're driving by it, or if it happens to be your sample stop. If there's a nice green field on one side of the road and a SDS infected field on the other side of the road, but you're at your 12 miles or your 15 miles, whatever it is, when you're going to make your stop, curious minds want to know, and I'm telling you, the scouts that come out here are very curious people, and they're going to go into that SDS field. They're going to take a look at just exactly what that disease is doing to it. Now, when they come walking back out of that field, they might look across the road and say, wow, but look at that one. I was trying to get them to not focus intently on the disease, take note of it, but as soon as you see a bad field, look around. Look around and see what those other fields around it look like. And most of them came back and said, you know what, if we saw a field that was maybe half infected with SDS or 60% or 70%, if you looked across the road, there might have been a spot here and a spot there, but it was essentially 95, 98% good beans on the other side of the road. So The bean crop in Iowa, like I said, is the swing factor for the bean crop. What is good in Iowa is really good, guys. Really good. And this might be a subject to discuss at some other point, but I think the genetics are finally starting to catch up with this bean crop. You know, they've been lagging what we've done in corn, but it sure feels like and looked like to us that the genetic improvement that we've got on this bean crop is pretty significant this year. You look at the number of pods per node. In the past, you run 3, maybe 4. Sometimes, if you're lucky, you get 5. We were counting 4, 5, and sometimes 6 bean pods per node out there on the trip this week, and that is something that really shocked me. You know, you don't just get 3 or 4; you get a cluster, and that suggests to me that the plant breeders out there have finally stuck some genetics out here that are going to start to pump up this bean yield. And this might be the year that we catch it.
You spent a lot of time, Chip, trying to convince us, or at least it seemed like it, convince us that these yields were really, really there. Mm-hmm. Are you having to convince anybody?
Who
doesn't believe you?
Sure. You know what? I've had a couple of people that were on tour, and by the time we were done, I was done with the conversation with him. He says, "You know what? You're probably right, because it felt like I drew the short straw every day of the tour this year." And sometimes that happens to a guy. They get on there and they see the worst yields of the day on their route every day. And when you run into a guy like that, sometimes you got to do a little bit of hand holding and explain to him, just look at the numbers, look at the numbers. And I'm going to take you guys back to that 167.3 that was the average yield of all 1,014 corn samples this year. Last year is 169.2. Okay? So we need to back off a little bit from that, but think about it, 169.2 last year on a very immature crop, ended up being a 164.7 because somehow, some way, that crop made it to the finish line. Now, I'll still argue that it didn't, but but somehow, some way, it ended up a 164.7. The maturity of this crop, you got to trust it. You got to trust that what you see out there in the field is there. Now, the test weight comment that you were making is interesting to me. Now, the test weight, that's one of the reasons. That's one of the variables that is in play when we put that 1% plus or minus on it. And at 162.5, on the downside, at the bottom end of our yield range, I would guess that the 162.5 would catch most of the test weight issues that might be out there.
Chip, on 08, do you have the 08 numbers as far as your corn samples?
How many samples we pulled?
Yeah, and what that yield was at that point.
You know what? I don't have them in front of me. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry about it, because that was the year we went down to 153.9. I just wanted to see where you're at that point.
Well, in 2008, now this I have in front of me. In 2008, we estimated the crop in the third week of August at 12.152 billion bushels. 12.152 billion bushels, and it ended up at 12.101 billion bushels. So we were 51 million bushels too high on that corn crop. That was off. We were off by 0.42%.
Chip, let's move back to Iowa real quick. We've seen Iowa get some pretty excessive rains here the last couple of weeks. How did that factor into what you saw, and how did it factor into what you saw for an Iowa corn yield?
Yeah, on Wednesday I took just a half-day break from tour, and I busted from Nebraska City to Ames, Iowa, to move my freshman daughter into the dorms at Iowa State, and then I left there and I made my way up to Spencer for the meeting that night and managed to pull a few samples by myself on the way up to Spencer. But I drove right up 35 is the moral of the story here, and conditions are terrible. It's just horrible there along 35 in the central part of the state, yeah, we took that into consideration. We talked about it. You've got to talk about the potential that of damage from getting more precipitation since January 1 than we had in 1993, for goodness sakes. The difference this year is that the flooding is not as widespread. Where it is, it's very concentrated and it's very severe. It's taking out the acres in there, and for those farmers that are impacted by it, it's absolutely devastating. Is it going to have a major impact on what we produce in the state? Probably not.
Does it get worked into the calculation at all?
It does by way of crop scouts stopping in some of those flooded areas. Okay,
and pulling ears then.
Well, if there were ears to pull,
did you have zeros?
They pulled those. Yeah, there was 1-0 out of crop district 5 in Iowa this year.
I've got several guys in Iowa that are clients that said they'll have their best yield ever,
yeah.
And they're within 5 miles of the flooding.
Right,
but they're not in it because it's not as widespread as you said, and they said that it is concentrated, like you said.
Yeah. So we got to pay attention to it, and believe me, when the Iowa numbers came in, I went straight to crop district 5 to. I was hoping to see at least 1-0,
mm-hmm.
hoping to see at least 1-0 so that we could say, yep, okay, the flood is in there. The flood is having an impact.
While you were out, and I suspect you did you talk much about demand?
Oh, every night.
And?
It's, you know, at 165 bushel per acre that USDA estimated, we're still, roughly 200 million bushels too short of keeping up with demand that they estimated in the August supply and demand report. And since then, which was, I'll remind you guys, it was last week, but since then, we got to jack those demand numbers up. We're in the middle of a demand surge right now and just trying to figure out how big the demand is going to be. I made an interesting interesting comment last night in our wrap-up meeting when we were talking about SDS. You know, it kind of hit me. The bean crop can handle a little, or I shouldn't say the bean crop. I should say the bean market can handle a little SDS in Iowa, or a chunk of SDS in Iowa, and that is because we got plenty of supply, and a little bit of some disease pressure might help fix that problem just a little bit. Now, corn, it's just the opposite. We absolutely cannot, we can't lose a bushel. I went out on the crop tour this year hoping to find yield potential better than that 165, because I love a demand market. I love a demand pull market. And it thrills me every year when we go out there on this crop tour to see that with demand growing as much as it is, the genetics are responding, the farmers are responding with better management, we're responding with acreage in the right places, we're doing everything right to keep up and put enough corn into this market to keep up with surging demand. It just thrills me to go out and do that, and I was hoping that I was going to find some yield potential above that 165 bushels per acre, and I was pretty disappointed in Iowa. Oh, yeah, Iowa. The other impact of all that rain showed up in the grain length, okay? And I'm not going to say that it was just too much rain or it was the soggy conditions are bringing on some diseases or the hot temperatures had an impact. It's a cumulative result of all of those things that shortened up the grain length on the ear this year. And I'm not. It's not all in tip back. We saw some ears, quite a few of the samples. The ears were filled all the way to the tip. It's just that they never developed the size that the ears did a year ago. So our grain length was down about 7% from last year. Our Iowa yield estimate was down 6.4% from last year. So it's real easy to tell where the impact why we ended up with a lower yield in Iowa. It's because of the grain length. And you think about it, good gosh, if we could have just got another quarter inch on average per ear, it would make a world of difference. And I'm a little concerned going forward that we're going to get into a rationing process, and I sure don't like what that means for our cattle and hog and dairy and chicken guys out there, and we need a healthy healthy animal agriculture industry to keep this crop industry happy too, and I'm a little concerned that after a rough year, we might be heading back into something rough on the supply side, on the input supply side, the feed supply side.
Chip, thanks so much for being with us.
You bet, Todd. Thank you.
Chip Flory is fresh off the Pro Farmer Tour. If you're listening to us on the radio, you might want to go visit willag.org because Chip goes on for about another 10 or 12 minutes with our discussion. Now we'll take a moment for a final word from our panelists in studio, including from Midco, Aaron Curtis.
Well, we talked a lot about demand, and I think that makes for a pretty fun market, but also creates a lot of opportunities. So I think the farmer or producer needs to continue to take advantage of some of these opportunities and stay on top of this with their marketing plan.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
I think demand-driven is what we're talking about now, especially on the corn. We have huge demand also on beans. And depending on where you're at on your sales, we need to take advantage of higher prices with sales.
And Mike Zuzalo.
In the short term, going into harvest, be real careful if the rains come through in case the technicals and the funds decide to unwrap some more feed grains and we don't get follow-through upside on the wheat.
Mike Zuzalo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. You've been listening to Commodity Week. You can hear it anytime you'd like at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.